to be there is determined by the culture or society in which one happens to live. What is healthy in one society is not healthy in another. It is all relative. There can be no universal and objective standard of mental health, they declare, just as there can be no universal and objective standard of moral values. This view is expressed, for instance, by Karen Horney, when, in The Neurotic Personality of Our Time, she writes, quote, "With us, a person would be neurotic or psychotic who talked by the hour with his deceased grandfather, whereas such communication with ancestors is a recognized pattern in some Indian tribes. A person who felt mortally offended if the name of a deceased relative were mentioned, we should consider neurotic indeed, but he would be absolutely normal in the Jicarilla Apache culture." Dr. Horney speaks for the majority of her profession when she concludes that almost every statement about normalcy or mental health must be qualified by the expression "in this society" or "in this culture." Psychological relativism is a corollary of moral relativism and contains the same thesis. Just as the nature of mental health is not determined by individual preference, so it is not determined by social, cultural, or historical preference. It is determined by the nature of man. That some hallucinating savage lives on an island where hallucinations are fashionable does not alter the fact that hallucinations are the proof and the product of an aberrant, malfunctioning mind. A leper cannot make himself healthy by joining a leper colony where his disease is shared by everyone. Neither can a schizophrenic. Health is not adherence to a statistical norm. A healthy body is one whose organs function efficiently in maintaining the life of the organism. A diseased body is one whose organs do not. The standard by which health and disease are to be measured is life, for it is only the alternative of life or death that makes the concept of health or disease meaningful or possible. Just as medical science evaluates man's body by the standard of whether or not his body is functional as man's life requires, so psychological science must uphold the standard of life appraising the health or disease of man's consciousness. The health of man's consciousness must be judged, like the health of any other organ, by how well it performs its proper function. And the function of consciousness is perception, cognition, and the regulation of action. An unobstructed consciousness, an integrated consciousness, a thinking consciousness, is a healthy consciousness. A blocked consciousness, an evading consciousness, a self-blinded consciousness, a consciousness disintegrated by fear or immobilized by depression, a consciousness dissociated from reality, is an unhealthy consciousness. Neurotic and psychotic manifestations are the symptoms of the mind's malfunctioning. Now, in order to learn whether a particular action or belief is an expression of such malfunctioning, it may be necessary, in certain cases, to evaluate and interpret the action or belief in a social, cultural, or historical context. But this is an issue of diagnosis, not the nature of mental health. It is not an indication of neurosis, for instance, for a man to believe in the 6th century that the world is flat, but to believe it in the 20th century is. The diagnostician has to take into consideration the knowledge available to the patient or person being studied. Ignorance or honest errors of knowledge are not intrinsic signs of disease. Only errors due to evasion, to the rejection of available evidence, are. The concept of mental health pertains then to the manner in which a consciousness functions. This determines the degree of its health. What, in essence, does mental health depend on and require? It requires. requires a man that he place no value above perception, which means no value above consciousness, which means no value above reality. Every neurosis entails a great reality. Neurotic is a man who, when his desires clash with reality, considers reality expendable. This is the attitude that the psychotherapist must seek to correct. But he cannot do so except by challenging, A, the patient's manner of using his consciousness, the abuses to which he subjects it, the evasions, the emotions, the policy of mental inertia, and B, the values that create the patient's emotions and set his purposes in motion. If the patient is to be cured of his neurosis, he must learn to distinguish between a thought and a feeling, between a fact and a wish, and to recognize that nothing but destruction can result from sacrificing one's sight of reality to any other consideration. He must learn to seek his sense of self-esteem in the productive use of his mind, in the achievement of rational values, on whatever his level of ability or intelligence. He must learn that the approval of others cannot be a substitute for self-esteem, and that only anxiety is possible to those who attempt such substitution. He must learn to allow himself no contradictions in his values or actions. He must learn not to seek the fraud of unearned love and not to grant it. He must learn not to be afraid to question and challenge the most fundamental beliefs of his culture. He must learn to reject the claims of those who demand his agreement on faith. He must learn to fight for his own happiness and to deserve it. He must learn that the irrational will not work, and that so long as any part of him desires it, that desire is the cause of the suffering. A psychologist cannot and should not attempt to force his views on a patient who is unwilling to accept them. Nothing can compel a mind to work, to think, to accept reason. That is a matter of a man's own choice. But this does not mean that health or disease, good or evil, are subjective and personal.